down to the left side. We will survive in this country wilderness. Swimming through the waters of Babylon like a rebel fish. Journalist, specialist, predator and survivalist. Spitting hell and fire from his lips. Burn the same driver.
Welcome, listeners, to Time for an Awakening on Black Talk Radio Network, New Media for the New Millennia. This is a history and the current events program from a cultural perspective. We find this program necessary because Hosea 4:6 states, "My people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge." But we as a people can turn this around. Proverbs 4:7 states wisdom is the principal thing. Therefore, get wisdom. And with all that, getting an understanding. Again, welcome to the program this evening with your hosts, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. The number to reach us to join the conversation this evening is 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We're streaming live at several locations. You can go to timeforanawakening.com, which is the home page, and catch the live stream from that location. You can go to www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening. Again, that's www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening. Catch the live stream there also. You can go to ourradionetwork.com. Again, that's ourradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening. They broadcast out of the Black Belt and catch the live stream there. Or you can download TuneIn to any of your handheld devices. TuneIn is a free app. And in that TuneIn search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening. There you'll see the icon and you can stream your program live, even into your car if you have the Bluetooth capabilities or the auxiliary connection. Again, that's Time for an Awakening radio program with the live stream on the TuneIn app. Drop us an email at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Again, that's timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Time for an Awakening also has a fan page on Facebook. In that Facebook search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening radio program. There you always see interesting content being posted daily by myself or Brother Richard. And before you leave that page, just do me a favor and hit that like button. That's Time for an Awakening radio program with the fan page on Facebook, and Time for an Awakening Media is there. Always full of the latest podcast on Time for an Awakening. Interesting articles that you can read, download at later times, or share with your friends. And also check out the Time for an Awakening Marketplace in partnership with the B.B. Toomey. Always interesting things being posted in the marketplace daily. Language classes, African language classes, classes on education, economics, social systems, health, and more, taught by professors on both the continent and in the diaspora. So check it out. Check out that marketplace on timeforanawakening.com. Make that one of your favorites. Put that in your address bar. That's timeforanawakening.com. TimeForAnAwakening.com will take you straight to Time for an Awakening Media. It's 8:10 in the city of Philadelphia, and we're in Freestyle Friday mode. Anything that's on your mind, you can give us a call, and we can talk about it, kick it around. And you can do that by dialing 215-490-9832. Again, that's 215-490-9832. And we'll be right back to get the program started after a brief word from our sponsors.
Mr. Moderator, our distinguished guests, brothers and sisters, our friends and our enemies. Everybody is here.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services if when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
Overworked? Suffering with an underperforming company, headache customer, staff, or vendors? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? We turned a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one transformation created for entrepreneurs like you in various industries around the country. Not what you're used to from accounting and business consulting? Well, welcome to New Business Solutions. If you're ready to go beyond advising, coaching, and training and get implemented results, call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions apply the best comprehensive administrative, accounting, operations, human resources, management, sales, and marketing to help you actualize your vision for yourself and your company. From anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072. Spelled new as in numerous on your device right now. Book your free consultation at newbusinesssolutions.com.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
From antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening. With your host, Brother Elliot, Sundays 7 p.m., Fridays at 8 p.m. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit us up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. And before we get started with our program this evening, I want to welcome in my co-host, Philadelphia activist and tour guide at the African American Museum here in Philadelphia at 7th and Arch Street, Brother Richard. Is with us, Brother Richard.
Yes, sir, Brother Owen.
How are you, sir?
I'm doing fine this Friday evening. It's for me, it's a slow kind of, seems like things are kind of calm, even though I know they're making big events in the city, but it's something just kind of slow. And I don't know if that's a calm before the storm, because I understand there's a was that a hurricane that's supposed to be hitting, possibly hitting the Gulf Coast and
Florida.
Maybe and Florida? which I hope that everybody in the Time for Awakening audience that's in Florida, you know, do what's necessary to prepare themselves, you know, so that they don't get caught up in the storm. And that's the water storm or, you know, the other social storms that's brewing in our reality.
Yeah, because it already hit St. Thomas, several of the Virgin Islands, and they had been,
oh, it did?
Yeah, they had been. They haven't really kind of bounced back from when they got devastated. What was that? 2 years ago or last year? I think it was
yeah,
2 years ago.
Yeah.
When they got hit by the hurricane. So I guess we'll see what happens once they, you know, they start kind of clearing what's going on and communications is back up and see what's going on as far as damage-wise. But I think it bypassed Puerto Rico because they was kind of battening down their hatches, but it kind of went in another direction.
Which is interesting, you know, on that because, you know, the early part of the week they were, you know, talking about fires, the big fires that are occurring in amongst the Amazon and in Africa, the Congo, you know, forest region. So we have fire and water going on in a turmoil right now.
Richard, you know, we see things in the atmosphere that's going on, and it's really, it should be a wake-up call for our folks to develop a sense of urgency to make a change and do something different than what we've been doing as a group. I'm not talking about as in, you know, because some individuals are trying to make a change, but I think we need more of our people at least alert and more on board to different things that's going on so they can get involved in something to change our paradigm here. And if they don't do it for themselves, at least do it for our children.
Mm.
Because this system has things planned for our people. And if our people just sit back and look critically at this system that we're in, we can see the plans for our children is not what we would want. You know, so
that's true. You know, you say that I'm more and more bringing to fore, and it's something that the, you know, white hegemony is pushing in relationship to power. Yeah, I mean, I don't know how many people have really heard, you know, Elliot, how often they push that, you know, they've always centered things in 2050. You know, and I've said that for them, 2050 is now what they're putting in place. And they're saying this is, you know, projecting for 2050. So here we are in 2019 and 2020. And they've been pushing that for since 2015, maybe since 2000, looking at their projection of 2050.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the question we should be asking, well, and that's what Brother Professor Carl Tolan Jones is, you know, in his documentary Independent Day, kind of put out there. Well, what does 2050 look like for us? Because we know what 2019 and 2020 look like, but shouldn't we have some ideal and be working towards that?
Yeah, but, I mean,
if not beyond, you know.
Yeah, 2050 and beyond, most definitely. Mm-hmm. You know, Richard, and again, we're in Freestyle Friday mode, so anything that's on the listeners' minds, give us a call. We'll kick it around and talk about it. 215-490-9832 is the call-in number. That's 215-490-9832. Richard, there's a couple of things I want to throw out there for the listening audience. This first one came on the 26th. That was Monday, if I'm not mistaken. They ruled on that case in Oklahoma against pharmaceutical companies in reference to this opioid crisis that had been devastating white America. Let me read some of this because I got kind of a question for you. And it's not necessarily a question for you, but just a question.
Yeah.
It says, judge ruled, and this is from a published report in the USA Today, I think this is. Judge rules against Johnson & Johnson in landmark opioid case in Oklahoma. An Oklahoma judge on Monday ruled against Johnson & Johnson in the state's opioid suit, forcing the company to pay $572 million in the first ruling in the U.S. holding drug makers accountable for helping fuel the epidemic. Calling the opioid crisis an imminent danger and menace, District Judge Thad Bachman said the state meant its burden that the defendants, Johnson and Johnson, a Johnson's misleading marketing and promotions of opioids created a nuisance as defined by the law, including a finding that those actions compromised the health and safety of thousands of Oklahomans. Defendants caused an opioid crisis that evidenced by increased rates of addictions, overdose deaths, neonatal syndrome, he added. The ruling, which Johnson & Johnson intends to appeal, says that the company and the subsidiary Janssen repeatedly downplayed the risk of addiction to opioids, training sales representatives telling doctors the risk is 2.6 or less if the drug was prescribed by a doctor. Physicians who prescribed high amounts of opioids were targets as key customers. Judge Thad Bachman's decision puts manufacturers of all lawful but political unpopular products at risk. Echoing the view of Lisa Rickman, president of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce Institute for Legal Reform, who said if the decision wasn't reversed, almost any industry could be the target of large-scale litigation. Richard, here's a question for you. Now, wait a minute. Let me read this other kind of partnering article with it. And this came from the Fox News site. Oklahoma's Johnson & Johnson's verdict figures to impact other opioid lawsuits. On Monday, the ruling Monday ordering Johnson & Johnson to pay $572 million to clean up Oklahoma's opioid crisis could impact similar lawsuits seeking to hold the drug industry accountable for overdose deaths across the country. The impact could be felt rather quickly. A federal judge in Ohio is presiding over 1,500 opioid lawsuits brought by the state and local government tribunals, with the first of two set in a trial in October. The plaintiffs in those two cases are Ohio companies. The Oklahoma verdict could put more pressure on Johnson & Johnson and other drug industry defendants in those cases to settle while bolstering the claims of plaintiffs. Richard, question for you, because we see here that just like in any other lawsuit, once one state kind of makes a precedent, the others follow. Because we see here that after this case in Oklahoma, that Ohio is ready to do the same or similar because they got cases coming up in October. White America, Europeans in general, see that this opioid crisis will be devastating to their population. They know that their population have been decreasing. And just like you said, they have plans in their mind for their children. And addiction to opioids is devastating white America. It's spilling over into black areas, but it's really devastating white America. Urban areas and rural areas. Oklahoma is not necessarily an urban area. So you can go to those areas in Oklahoma and you see what it's doing there. The question that I want to kind of, it's a rhetorical question, Richard, but I want to see your opinion on it. How come none of our attorneys, and I might be wrong because you might be aware of some, how come they've never brought a lawsuit against this federal government for what it did in regards to crack, because there's tons of evidence that shows that the government itself, just like Malcolm says in that clip, was compliant and complicit in creating that crack epidemic, both Democrats and Republicans. And then they turn around and made laws to make sure our people went to jail if they were using or selling crack, according to that 1994 crime bill that Bill Clinton, he was a Democrat. If you remember, Richard, when Oliver North and those others circumvented Congress and tried to get weapons to Iran to fight against Iraq, or Iraq to fight against Iran, I'm sorry. And they used profits from drugs to do it. And they had reports that during the Republican administration of George Bush Sr., that they were flying, including different ports, but one of the places that they were flying it in was into Arkansas. And Bill Clinton was the governor at that time, and he was a Democrat. So we see that the government itself was complicit in doing this, creating a crack epidemic that devastated Black America that we're still reeling from the effects of now. And I'm just wondering how come a lawsuit was never brought against this government, similar to what the farmers did, similar to what Thurgood Marshall and others did about them not going along with the amendments that was made to the Constitution right after the Civil War and brought those lawsuits. How come I was just wondering, just openly wondering, why was it never a lawsuit brought against this government for what they did in regards to crack?
You know, truthfully, I don't know. I can make up something, you know, and, you know, you notice that in the case that you read, it's primarily the state doing it for the harm it has done to its citizens.
Exactly.
Right.
I mean, wait a minute, Richard, because I know you want to kind of go into that, but that, you're exactly right. It's not private citizens here suing Johnson & Johnson. It's the state doing it for the people, basically, saying this menace. In fact, let me read exact wording here. Opioids created a nuisance as defined by the law, including findings that those actions compromised the health and safety of thousands of Oklahomans. That was their legal wording. So you mean to tell me that this government's actions, not pharmaceutical companies necessarily, that this government actions didn't compromise the health and safety of millions of African Americans when they flooded these cities with crack? I mean, that seems, I'm no lawyer. I have no legal training at all. But that seems like a lawsuit against this government for what was done.
Right, right. If the politicians, I mean, that's the, if it wasn't going to be a class action suit, and I take it, and I don't know the legal, you know, how do you do that? How do the citizens hold suit the federal government? And I'm using the language I kind of usually hear, as far as that it would be some kind of class action suit presented, right? That has to go through the courts, which was because those politicians, since they don't want to act like they're representing their districts. Now, it seemed like if they operated in representing their district where the harm was done, then they would have to either petition the state or sue the state for not protecting the citizens within their district, you know, going through some type of chain of command. If the representatives represented the community, but the representatives, we know, Black representatives, they keep showing they don't represent their constituents, they represent the state. And that's where I see the challenge is, because if they represent the state and the state don't have no problem with it, and the state don't have no problem with the federal government, who they get resources from, the state gets resources from, making any claim against the federal government for harming its citizens in the state with all the evidence that you present, then it would have to be done by private citizens to the federal government.
Mm-hmm.
You know, now, and I think that's what the suit, when you talk about the, you know, the NAACP, these organizations, they were basically private organizations suing.
Yeah, exactly. And the same thing with that farmers lawsuit. It was private mm-hmm. farmers that got together and did all the legwork and basically filed this suit against the government.
Right.
But in this case, so, like you said, it's the government.
Right.
Suing the federal, suing these pharmaceutical companies.
Right.
For what was done to citizens.
Suing companies.
Mm-hmm.
And the state will get the benefit if they win, and they get the, they'll get the benefit from the companies to the state, which in the state will deal with how they're going to distribute in the name of dealing with their citizens. Now, the only thing that comes close, and I'm kind of foggy, so maybe you know, when the whole discussion around and the different suits went out against the tobacco industry, was that also the states suing the tobacco industry?
You know and what? Go ahead. I'm not sure. And that's a good
because thing. They did win, and it was, it was a win. And I don't remember people saying they directly got a paycheck. I mean, let me say, it all a paycheck, right? They directly got any kind of award from the tobacco industry for the harm that cigarettes did to them. But I know that they won because I think the tobacco industry gave out billions of dollars.
You know, and I'm glad you mentioned them, because even in that case, the cigarette companies admitted that they were menthol fortifying different cigarettes targeted especially for black neighborhoods.
Right.
To get them really addicted to smoking cigarettes. Right. So again, everything in this system has done, I don't care from what it is or where it is, from jobs to schooling to everything, this system has done is geared to put a foot on black people's necks. That's men, women. It's not just black men. Mm-hmm. Black families. It's targeted against black people.
Mm-hmm.
And then the thing about it, the double whammy, not only did the government, pour crack into these cities, then they made laws, federal laws, to make sure you go to jail for it.
Mm-hmm.
And here we see things are different. They're making all kind of laws, concessions, money available, retraining available when they get out of jail. Before, when they were throwing blacks in jail, you just sit up in jail, and then you get out, they throw you back into the community. And you didn't have any skills, and you probably a repeat offender, and you do the same thing again. They're giving these whites training. Number one, they're helping them get off drugs when they go to jail. And then when they come out, it's all types of retraining where they can become functional members in society again. It's state and federal and city money using these programs, our monies, that wasn't used for our children, but it's used for theirs.
Right.
So again, you know, another political decision, yeah. Richard. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, it's just you know, the thing of that point that you're making, in the sense of also the distinction between the historical demonization of black people and black males in particular, and the historical imagery, because these people who taking these opioids, they're not looked at as demons.
They're
as weak victims,
exactly,
of an overpowering industry who has been who manipulated them to become addicts, that they now need to be healed. Black people and black males particularly, the black community in general, and black people, black males in particular, they were seen as I don't want to, you know, the term demon, you know, but not victims, people who were persecuting their own community. So, yes, black males are demons in American society, you know, and therefore are harming, and a harm to themselves and harm to others, primarily their community, and the need for the society in general to be protected from them at all costs. The imagery, I guess I'm trying to say, and the characterization of the population who has been victimized by a larger entity.
Yeah, well, this is just the first shoe to drop. You can see here that it's going to be other suits around the country dealing with this opioid crisis. And listen, I don't guess the statute. Like I said before, I'm no lawyer. Statute of limitations might not have ran out, but maybe this will get the, you know, one of our attorneys to step forward and file suit against this government for the damage that was done to our generations of our people from this crack epidemic. And stuff that we don't even see. Some of these learning disabilities and all, with some of the children, some of the irrational behavior of some of these people on the streets, you can see, Richard, is directly related to that foolishness.
And again, the way they're characterized, and they will, because when they get this money, or, you know, it's just too simplistic to say that it's all about money. Right. Because I want to believe, I think money is out of the equation. It's all about control. Right. And they're controlling. They had to control this white population in the Midwest, in the Rust Belt, in West Virginia, in the South, in the Northeast, you know, where, I mean, the largest opiate users, I believe, was in the Northeast, in Maine, New Hampshire, Vermont. They had to control them. They have to control them, because in the reorganization of this economic society, they don't have no place for them. So getting them hooked up on drugs is a good way to be able to, while they're trying to figure out what to do with them, to have them in a state of being, they need help. And now the state, because, you know, the federal government was giving pharmaceuticals breaks in order to produce these drugs. You can say, and there's debate about this, that getting them on drugs.
Go ahead, Richard.
You could say that the federal government, by giving them tax breaks for research and development, giving them providing them the opportunity to do the research, you know, the money to actually do the research, not just using their own money, but also using taxpayers' money to create these chemicals, which they feed to the hospitals, which they feed to those people that live in those communities, you could say that they in the development of this opioid epidemic, because doesn't the Food and Drug Administration supposed to be regulating these drugs? And regulating the hospitals? I mean, wasn't there some regulation that's supposed to be going on? And obviously, just like when they had that the stock market crash, you know, they were supposed to have regulators, And they told us the regulators went to sleep or they were paid off by the companies. That's why they weren't regulating them. And that's why they got away with, and the whole thing got away of them, you know, just stealing the money. Well, this is the same thing. I mean, we've seen, what's that? I think it was a chicken farm that burnt down, or, you know, or all those, they were having these here things where these, the regulators didn't check, and they had this salmonella or these here infectious diseases that was in these here operations because the federal regulators didn't regulate, you know, actually go out and look. So I'm only trying to make the point that the, they created, you know, created a situation because they are in a situation where they got a large white male population that they don't know what to do with. And they can't just leave them because they, unlike the black population, again, or that's my belief, that they know the white population will come after them with their guns. And they got a group that's planned, prepared to come after them with their guns if they don't treat them right. So a good way to deal with them is to drug them up. And we can see that with the ones that's slipping through, them young boys that's, hey, what, they 18 years old and they shooting up schools?
Yeah, they just caught one the other day on his college campus that was about to get ready to do just that, but they caught him, I guess at the 11th hour. I forgot what college it was.
And they said that these guys are being inducted by the technology of the internet. I mean, so somebody's got a process. And I think the last one said, I'm angry. So that's my rant.
Yeah, I just wanted to throw that out there. And just a comparison of epidemic, so to speak, that hit populations here in this country hard. We see how differently this government itself is handling this, as opposed to the demonizing of black population in regards to crack epidemic, which they created. Mm. It wasn't like blacks created, manufactured, and brought crack here and plunged it into the community. The government itself did it, and then turned around and demonized black people once they got hooked. And you see the way they're handling this situation with the majority white folks that's hooked on these opioids.
Mm-hmm.
You see what they're doing in Philadelphia in regards to these safe injection sites that they want to have and things of that nature. You know, I thought that injecting yourself with heroin and drugs was illegal. Mm-hmm. But they, you know, they wanted to have safe injection sites, Richard, and use your tax dollars to put these things in white communities here in the fifth largest city in this country.
And when Swoop, I think it was the mayor of Baltimore, when he offered that suggestion of creating these safe zones, they thought he was crazy.
Wow. Yeah, well, listen, like I said, we're in open forum. Anything that's on your mind, you can give us a call. We'll be taking a break in about 15 minutes. It's a topic I wanted throw out there too before break, Richard. It has something to do with Jay-Z and some of the things that have been going on since his partnership with the NFL and throwing the movement that Kaepernick and some of the players started under the bus. I want to read from this article here because it's something going on here. And maybe the people can decipher. This is from a published report at Black America Web. Jay-Z slammed for investing in companies that track parolees with GPS software. Jay-Z fans are reportedly outraged over his reported investment in a startup company that assists state and local governments to track parolees. via GPS monitoring technology. According to Vera Institute of Justice, 62% of jail populations nationwide consist of folks who can't afford bail, and many who are incarcerated for nonviolent and misdemeanor offenses. This is where Promise comes in, and this is the company that he's invested in, or one of his companies. The program is a decarceration startup that raised $3 million earlier this year with participation from Jay-Z's Roc Nation, 8VC, and Kepper Capital. Hold on one second. I'm sorry. Kepper Capital. Last year, the rapper penned an op-ed column about the bail industry and how every year $9 billion is spent incarcerating individuals who have not been convicted of crimes. We are increasingly alarmed by the injustice in our criminal justice system, Jay-Z said in a statement. Money and time and lives are wasted with the current policies. It's time for innovative technology that offers sustainable solutions to this problem. Promise's team, led by co-founder and CEO Fedra Ellis Lampkins, is building an app that can provide liberty and justice for millions. In a criminal justice reform meeting, I've just discovered that Jay-Z is an investor in the company producing ankle monitoring braces used in this First Step Act. Blogger Sandra Rose notes that Promise doesn't raise funds to bail detainees out of jail. Instead, Promise is a technology software design company that sells apps that help the government agencies track people who are released from jail under the First Step Act. Now, it mentions this blogger here because she wrote an interesting article, this young lady, Sandra Rose. Let me read her article. It says, outraged, Jay-Z criticized for investing in a company that sells GPS software to track parolees. Jay-Z, in this picture with Nipsey Hussle, is under fire for investing $3 million in a startup company that assists the state and local governments to track parolees by improving the GPS monitoring technology. The difference between Jay-Z and the late rapper Nipsey Hussle is that Nipsey's uplifted the community while Jay-Z seeks to exploit and profit from it. In a criminal justice reform meeting that I attended, I just discovered that Jay-Z is an investor in a company producing ankle monitoring bracelets used to under the First Step Act. A Promise is a decarceration startup that raised $3 million in capital funding from corporations and individuals led by Jay-Z's Roc Nation. Promise doesn't raise funds. Promise provides an incarceration alternative by using software that replaces home confinement and ankle monitoring with a smartphone app to track participants and that's supposed to appear in court or to take urine tests. Jay-Z begins his pitch by noting that $9 billion is wasted in incarcerating people who have not been convicted of crimes. Instead of paying to keep criminals in jail because they can't afford it, Jay-Z's solution is to put them back on the streets and assist the local government and government agencies to track them through the use of this smartphone app to ensure that they show up for trial. Promise's team, led by a biracial founder, Fedra Ellis Lampkins, consists almost entirely of white men and one lone black guy. Ellis Lampkins responded to her critics on Twitter, who says that she and Jay-Z are profiting from GPS monitoring by noting that her company doesn't make GPS ankle monitoring devices. but she left out the part where her company helps government agencies keep tabs on people who are wearing ankle monitoring devices by tracking their every move with her app and with providing progress reports. Lampkin Ellis says instead of the county paying to incarcerate someone simply because they can't afford to post bail, the government can pay promise to monitor compliance with court orders and better keep tabs on people via this app. In other words, hold on a second. Again. In other words, Ellis Lampkins and Jay-Z advocate for releasing nonviolent petty criminals back onto the streets so Promise can profit by monitoring them. It's disingenuous for Fedra Ellis Lampkins to say her company doesn't profit from GPS tracking without explaining that her app improves on the GPS tracking technology. Many Twitter users say Jay-Z rarely invests a dime in the black community unless there's easy money to be made. It looks like they have a point. And this was the what the sister wrote in reference to this company that he has profiting from people being incarcerated. Now, it mentions this company, Roc Nation, started up this company, Richard, that helps right. improve these monitoring devices. Roc Nation is the entity that Jay-Z has that made this agreement with the NFL. Right. And from what I understand, and I'm gonna bring Scotty on in a second. This Roc Nation, according to published report, they handle over as a sports management company. They handle football players, basketball players, baseball players, soccer players, and some boxers. So they're a sports management company that's been that already been doing business with the NFL. So it was disingenuous for him to be talking about in favor of Kaepernick and what they were doing in the beginning when he was already doing business with the NFL. They just brought it out, and he just came on out the closet with it. Mm. It mentions here that Roc Nation, headed by world-renowned rapper Sean Carter or Jay-Z, Roc Nation has established its presence in the industry since the founding in 2013. Some of Roc Nation's most valuable clients are NFL running back Todd Gurley and Saquon Barkley, Seattle second baseman Robinson Cano, CC Sabathia. Roc Nation Sports Management manages 934.7 million in active contracts. So we can see that what this man is doing is disingenuous at best and lying to some of the people that that he claims to be in favor of. Let's bring Scotty on to talk about this. Scotty, are you there? Scotty.
You hear me?
I hear you now.
You hear me?
I hear you now.
Okay. Good evening.
I don't hear you. You're breaking up.
Audience. So yeah, man. What about now?
I'm losing your audio. It's in and out.
Do you need me to call in for my?
Yeah, do that.
What about now?
I hear you now.
Is this,
it goes in
and out. Is it better?
It's going in and out.
Am I still? Yeah, I'll call back.
Good. We'll take a break, and when we come back,
I'll call back.
Good. We'll take a brief break, and when we come back, we'll bring Scotty on from. Black Talk Radio Network and the founder and CEO of Black Talk Radio Network to kick around this issue. But you don't have to listen to us. You can get involved too in the conversation by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. Time for an awakening. We're in open forum. It's 8:55 in the city of Philadelphia, and we'll be right back.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening. Time for an Awakening. With host Brother Elliot and Brother Richard on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
I think you'll find, sir, that there will come a time when black people wake up and become intellectually independent enough to think for themselves. As other humans are intellectually independent enough to think for themselves, then the black man will think like a black man, and he will feel for other black people. And this new thinking and feeling will cause black people to stick together. And then at that point, you'll have a situation where when you attack one black man, you are attacking all black men. And this type of black thinking will cause all black people to stick together. And this type of thinking also will bring an end to the brutality inflicted upon black people by white people. And it is the only thing that will bring an end to it. No federal court, state court, or city court will bring an end to it. It's something that the black man has to bring an end to himself.
Now you preachers and leaders, you administrators, you teachers, you leaders, you are the worst. No cowardly, punctified leader will lead this new generation of young black men and women. Your day of leading them is finished. You can't feel it? When you talk to young people, you can't feel that you're missing them? Parents, you can't feel when you're talking to your children that this is a new generation and they don't want to hear your compromising talk? Did you hear them in Ferguson tell Jesse, get the hell out of here? You ain't no leader. I was hurting for my brother because Jesse worked hard for our people. But time has moved on. And what was good yesterday ain't no good at all today. So either either you become a new vessel so that new wine can be poured into the old wineskin, or your day of leading our people is over and it will never come back to you again. We're still in the land of our bondage. We're still in the land of captivity. We're still a slave to the Democratic Party. Still a slave to the Republican Party. You can't even see a Freedom Party. You don't see it. You're a slave. I'm a slave. And unless we admit that we are slaves, then we can never get free. Never get free.
Put the present Democratic administration in Washington, D.C. The whites were evenly divided. It was the fact that you threw 80% of your votes behind the Democrats that put the Democrats in the White House. When you see this, you can see that the Negro vote is the key factor. And despite the fact that you are in a position to be the determining factor, what do you get out of it? The Democrats have been in Washington, D.C. only because of the Negro vote. They've been down there 4 years, and all other legislation they wanted to bring up, they brought it up and gotten it out of the way, and now they bring up you. And now they bring up you. You put them first, and they put you last, because you're a chump. A political chump.
So you could see that the government of America has been planning our demise. Any members of Congress here, any members of the civil rights movement that are here, you love this nation. You've suffered every indignity to make America better, that she might be great. And every time you forced her to make a law that was in our favor, they came right behind that law with skill and chicanery to make the law of non-effect.
When it came to treating the citizens of African descent fairly, America failed. She put them in chains. The government put them on slave quarters, put them on auction blocks, put them in cotton fields, put them in inferior schools, put them in substandard housing, put them in scientific experiments, put them in the lowest paying jobs, put them outside the equal protection of the law, kept them out of their racist bastions of higher education, and locked them into positions of hopelessness and helplessness. The the government gives them the drugs, builds bigger prisons, passes a three-strike law, and then wants us to sing God Bless America? No, no, no. Not God Bless America. God damn America. That's in the Bible for killing innocent people. God damn America for treating our citizens as less than human. God damn America, as long as she tries to act like she is God and she is supreme.
Welcome back to Time for an Awakening, and it's 9:06 in the city of Philadelphia. Time for an Awakening. We're in Freestyle Friday mode. You can get involved in the conversation by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. Let's reach back out to Brother Scotty Richard and see how's it. Brother Scotty. Scotty. Mm. Mm. Oh, man. Scotty, can you hear me? Scotty.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, it sounds like your volume is up too high.
My volume up too high. Well, I'm on the phone now, man.
Okay. Yeah, we're getting a little feedback. I hear double speak. You might have volume up on your speaker or something.
Give me a second, Elliot. Okay, can you hear me now?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right. Sorry about all the audio difficulties, but I'm going to keep the Kaepernick situation simple, although it is not a simple issue. It's a whole lot of historical background to this in terms of boycotts and what have you, as I spoke to you, you know, offline before about some of your prior guests and when they were talking about boycotting the white grocery store. And black people who would break the boycott and how they were confronted. And sometimes it got violent. Nobody was killed or nothing, but somebody might have got roughed up for breaking the boycott because, you know, the fight for rights, you know what I'm saying, human rights and black dignity and respect was that serious.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And so, you know, that's why I like Time for Awakening and what you brought to the network over the years with the historical perspective on black struggle. So this is just really another chapter in that. So how did this start? Okay, we're talking about the NFL. Let's keep the focus on the NFL. Kaepernick, a young man who was a 49ers fan, fan of Kaepernick. He lived in San Francisco. He was playing in San Francisco. Was killed by the police. I pulled up the video. I didn't want to watch the video, but I saw the still shots. It was like, Elliot, 7 or 8 cops in a firing line, and this dude up against the wall with a quote-unquote knife. And they shot this young man over 20-some times, might have been as many as 50. You know, and that really troubled Kaepernick. So that's why he started sitting down at first and not standing up for that. And he ain't the first to do that. He's just, you know, one of the latest to do something like that. Well, he the first to sit down, you know, on a national stage like that during the anthem. But, you know, like I was telling somebody else, man, when my daughter was playing middle school basketball, so this had to be in the late 90s, somewhere around the early 2000s. Me and my mom would sit when we go to the games and they do the national anthem. This is after I got out the military, after I had read Malcolm X's biography and really, you know, grew in my understanding of this so-called nation. And we used to sit. We wouldn't stand up, and nobody said a word to us. And you know, I live in a predominantly white county. So these were predominantly white people. One might have looked or something, but they ain't say nothing. So he's not the first, man. People have done that, but on the national stage, on the biggest stage in the world, one of the, you know, NFL has that kind of global pull. He then was sitting down in protest of that. Then, you know, the military dude said, well, some people take that as disrespectful. So, you know, in the military, we take the knee for our fallen comrades. So you can interpret him taking the knee for all the people murdered by police and police got paid vacation, because that's what he was protesting. No accountability for police murdering people. This was in 2015, 15. That's the accurate history of how it got started. So then, of course, you know, the media do what it do, and it's a reporter notice. He didn't put out a press release or nothing. The one reporter noticed he was doing this, and then he was wearing socks with pigs on them, you know, with cops, pigs with cops uniform on some socks. They wrote about that, and then that's how it blew up nationally. And he was putting the focus on police violence and killing people and getting away with it, black people. Mm-hmm. Although it's happening to all Americans, he specifically said black people. He was in that specific moment standing up for black people. So for those that want to question his so-called black card, which I don't see how anybody has the authority to be revoking anybody's card, you know, but you know, bringing up his mixed race as, oh, he can't be an authentic black voice. Okay, so that's garbage, you know. And so then just went on for 2 years, you know, he didn't sign a contract with somebody, and then he didn't get no more offers, so it went into collusion, which the NFL settled with him, and then Eric Reed, who's now playing here in Charlotte for the Carolina, they had enough proof to prove that these NFL teams colluded to keep them off the team. Remember, Trump was saying, you know, fire the SOBs and mm-hmm. calling them, you know, that kind of stuff. So the only reason the NFL settled with them, and we don't know how much the settlement was, which was not them selling out, but getting payment reparations for paying the injury for colluding to take away my ability to make money in this job skill that I have that many other people don't have. That's what they got paid for. That wasn't selling out. That was payment for injury. And they continue to blackball or whiteball Cap and keep him out. So this went on. 2017, Jesse Jackson, Rainbow Push Coalition. People say whatever they want to say about Jesse Jackson. A lot of stuff is credible. There's a lot of questionable things that he has done. But that organization, you can't put that on every member of that organization, Rainbow Push Coalition, because they have younger people in it. And it's not just not one organization that he's running, but it's a number of organizations. I think it was September the 27th, they did a press conference, and it was covered by the Associated Press, and he called for a boycott of no watching NFL games, no going to no games, until Kaepernick was on the NFL team. Those were his words. Jesse Jackson started this boycott. I put a poll up on Twitter. The majority of the people who participated in the poll, it was just a slim margin, thought Jay-Z started the boycott. No, Rainbow Push Coalition started that boycott, and we was hashtagging it hashtag NFL blackout. No black people going to games. No black people watching them. Nobody going to the bar and spending money and what have you, and having these watch parties and what have we boycotting. Young people was going out to the stadiums. I saw them in Charlotte. I don't know about other cities or in Philadelphia or wherever they have NFL teams, but them young people was demonstrating out in front of where the Panthers play every Sunday, Bank of America Stadium. And this has been ongoing. Ever since 2017. And so for Jay-Z to say something, well, we passed kneeling now, it ain't his call. It ain't his show. He was never participating. He been fronting. Now, the impression was given that he called for a boycott because a story was leaked that he told so-and-so artist not to do the Super Bowl. I don't think that'll be a good idea. Now he's saying he wasn't telling the dude to boycott. He was saying your name is bigger than that white band over there, whatever, Maroon 5 or whatever. So you don't want to play second billing. So, but at that time, everybody was getting the impression, because Rihanna and other artists were supporting Kaepernick, still do as far as I know, and Jay-Z was never part of this boycott. Because, as you mentioned earlier, Rock Nation Sports is two companies. Rock Nation is an entertainment company that he has a partnership with Live Nation, which used to be Ticketmaster, and they merged with somebody, a white corporation, but they sell all the tickets all over the world to these live events and what have you. So Roc Nation is an entertainment company he founded, and then he partnered with Live Nation, and that's now called Roc Nation, okay? So it ain't just him by himself. Then you got sports. Then you got Roc Nation Sports. And I'm going to tell you, man, I didn't close it, but you can Google this stuff. He partnered with an L.A.-based agency that already had these clients. Okay? They already had most of those clients that he's being named. They already had them when they went into the partnership with Jay-Z. And so that's Jay-Z the capitalist. I ain't saying there's anything wrong with making money. But in terms of what went down with Kaepernick and what Kaepernick was standing for and what black people still going through, and for him to think that he can call some shots and something, he wasn't really participating in. You know, like Eric Reed said, in terms of the players that's still taking a knee, when did you take a knee? You ain't in the NFL taking no knees. No, you are a part owner or a partner in this corporation. That's making, I think you named how much in NFL contracts is they doing?
What did it say here? $934.7 million in contracts.
That's almost $1 billion, man.
Yeah.
So he never, you know, Jay-Z ain't credible.
But you know, Scotty, you know, you raised some questions for me. You know, the banning, because it seemed with the question, I guess the simple question is, do you think that the narrative to make Jay-Z like he's the one that's doing this compared to, because it seems like he's already, as you said, he's partnering with already large companies that have these contracts. It's not like he went out and got them, or my impression would be.
He built it up from scratch.
Right. That's the way it's kind of like, but that's not the case. It's he's buying it, not, or they allowing him to buy into it to a degree. But the narrative, right. But the narrative is like he's doing all these moves. So my question is, do you think is he's creating this narrative, or are they creating this narrative, meaning the sports industry? Because as you said, it was all the way up to, the president, the owners of clubs they came together and agreed as a club, unified bunch of businessmen that they were going to exclude Kaepernick. That's the way, you know, I got the interpretation of it. So it wasn't just like one person or another. They came to a group decision.
But Richard, you can't say he and they. There is no Jay-Z and them. He is them. He part of them. Those are his business partners, right? Am I saying anything wrong?
No. And the only thing that, you know, because business, you can have a majority-minority relationship in business. And that's what I guess I'm getting at. Because if you're a minority, you have a minority relationship, yes, you're in partnership, but the majority still has the controlling interest. You're right. Just sitting at the table.
And the
controlling interest, you can may even have a disagreement, but you will have to go along with the controlling interest.
Right.
That's as you sit at the table.
And he's not the controlling interest.
Right, exactly. And even to get to that table, the controlling interest has to allow you in, unless you have... kind of like a hostile takeover, and then you made moves to position yourself to be the majority interest, even though they may have longevity of their company. And it doesn't seem like he has done that, because he's still a minority interest amongst that group in those two enterprises.
I mean, think of
that
it, Richard, in terms of history, you know, because you're a history buff. Think of it in terms during segregation, during the 60s. You know, as hard as it might be to fathom this happening, but let's just say during the 1960s at Woolworth, you know, because they were segregating their lunch counters or whatnot. But they allow one richest black person in America to buy in and have a minority share. But they still got a policy of segregation, right? They still dumping plates on black folks' head, and then black folks is demonstrating and whatnot, and then they send that black wealthy black person out there with a minority share out there to try to, you know, calm these Negroes down.
Right, and I think that's an important point to bring up as far as his imagery, and also to maintain the calm of his audience, because they do want his audience. And I think what you mentioned to me last week, that they were losing people who were actually watching. So the numbers were starting to dwindle. So it is, by making even him a minority partner, they are bringing that that consumer base. And
richer. He was already a partner with them before Kaepernick decided to take a seat and then a knee in 2015. I think he hooked up with them, the L.A. Sports Agency. I'm sorry I don't have the name in front of me, but I think that was in 2013 when he entered into that partnership. The one with Live Nation, which is now called Rock Nation, I think that was like somewhere around that same time.
Yeah, 2013.
But all of this was before. So he was already on the business interest side of the picket line, you know, when Kaepernick took that knee.
So it could be stand to reason again that this is about a propaganda campaign more than a business maneuvering based off of what's being said.
Great black solidarity or any kind of solidarity on this. Because again, Kaepernick didn't tell us to boycott the NFL. The NFL would have been able to hold that against him. How you going to be suing us because you ain't got no job and you telling people to harm the product? We can chalk that up to conduct detrimental to the league. So legally speaking, it wouldn't have been smart for Kaepernick to tell anybody to boycott. Because he took that stand and suffered the repercussions that he suffered, some black people, decided we're going to do an NFL blackout. And the earliest I can find documented evidence is that Rainbow Push Coalition with Jesse Jackson, you know, reading the statement they put out on until Kaepernick got a job in the NFL, no watching games and no going to games.
Which, Elliot, you raised a point with the sister that did the blog. And now it's starting to lose it. But you know, in this whole thing of Jay-Z raises the question about black capitalists who are being used by the majority interest, how we should view them. Are they, I mean, especially when he's buying into now this whole thing and this what is it, the prison reform system imagery, I'm gonna call it imagery. This whole thing of buying into this app that is going to be used for these braces, he's doing it as a business person.
Exactly. I'm glad you brought that back up, because I was listening as Elliot was reading. And Elliot, well, you were reading the article, were you not? They kept calling them criminals. They kept calling these people criminals.
Right.
You know, in one piece, you saying, well, they ain't been convicted, so what makes them criminals if they ain't been convicted? And then, you know, like Ava DuVernay put in her propaganda, the 13th, you know, from slave to criminal in one amendment, which is on point, you know. So you just call these people criminals. I don't know who was writing that, but I was like, man, you know, they ain't thinking towards justice or justice, you know. But anyway, look. The government do give out contracts. They bid on contracts, right, to these private companies to do the monitoring and stuff. Them Koch brothers, one of them just died. Them billionaire brothers, they are invested heavily in that reform movement. Jan Van Jones formed a company with Newt Gingrich. For people who don't know who he is, he was the right-wing House of Speaker who put forth that legislation and got it passed through Congress so Bill Clinton can sign that mass incarceration bills, that series of mass incarceration bills and what have you that we're dealing with today. So here are
with Biden and Senator. Was he senator or congressperson at that point in time?
He was a congressman. Newt Gingrich. He wasn't
Biden was in the Senate
at the time. You're right. You're right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Biden was arguing for it too, along with Hillary Clinton. All right, so now, you know, so I don't care if it is a nonprofit, you still paying administrative salaries and what have you, and you just taking it over from somebody else, and it's really not the government that pays it. Well, the government does pay it. The taxpayers do pay them. It's like sometimes bid contracts, and sometimes there be no bid contracts. But it's the prisoners or the victims, the accused, who pay for it, because you have to pay for that. They don't just give you free ankle monitoring or whatever, whether you're on probation, parole, or in this case, you know, on bond, and you ain't been convicted of nothing. That you have to pay for that. Mm-hmm. The government don't pay for that. So that's like double dipping. That's like they're getting taxpayers paying for it, and then the prisoners and victims themselves are paying for it. So that's right.
Like sharecropping.
Yeah, that don't sound right. You know what I'm saying?
Definitely. You know, but the question I'm asking is, how do we view the black capitalists who are taking advantage of that business enterprise? Are they negative actors in relationship?
When you mentioned earlier, negative actors, in my opinion. I was reading a quote. These black socialists on Twitter been circulating of Fred Hampton, and I heard that Jay-Z had shouted out Fred Hampton, you know, like he followed Fred Hampton or was an acolyte of Fred Hampton or read his teachings and believed in what Fred Hampton believed in. But there was a Fred Hampton quote on black capitalists said, you have to put these people out the community. That's what Fred Hampton said, the one they assassinated.
Right. Right,
starting the
right.
First Rainbow Coalition.
Right. And I think that, I mean, because that what you presented, you know, I would, you know, Scotty, for me, it helps clarify that Jay-Z being a minority business owner is just doing business. It's not necessarily doing social justice. It's not trying to do social reform around prison or police. On police brutality, it's just about opportunity in this arena, and it seems that the larger driver in changing the narrative is the sports company and the government itself, because I mean the news media
corporations, period.
Right. Right. They're the ones that's changing the narrative, making Jay-Z like he is a social entrepreneur compared to just a opportunist.
Man, that don't even make sense, social entrepreneur.
that's what they're pushing. I mean, it's the ability to make a profit off of doing social good.
Mm-mm-mm. Well,
you know, let me mention this, Richard, because
people know the history of where, in terms of black boycotting, if the boycott is we done and we move past that, you know what I'm saying? Like I was telling Elliot, when them Memphis garbage workers was on strike and marching with the signs and being confronted by armored personnel carriers in the streets and the National Guard, and they got the sign. It's an iconic pictures, man. They got the sign, I am a man, you know? And they was that was organized by one local organizer who was a garbage worker himself. And then he called on King and them to help him. And when King and them came up here, you know, King didn't go up there and say, oh, we passed marching now. You know what I'm saying? And in this case, Cap still, the boycott is over Cap being whiteballed. He stood up for marginalized people, and he's still paying the price for that. And so what kind of people would we be if we didn't, you know what I'm saying, back him?
Yeah, I mean,
now,
listen,
think about Keith going up there and telling somebody local who started something, oh, we passed that now. You know what I'm saying? That, man, come on.
But listen, that's the way I try to look at this, Scotty. I try to put it in some type of historical perspective. The reason that Kaepernick started that protest was because black people was being shot down, which we all are affected by one way or the other. So if you look at, and you raised Montgomery, Memphis. Look at Montgomery, when black people couldn't ride on buses, or they had to sit in the back of the bus, or give up their seat when white folks got on the bus. When they deemed that that is because they pay fares just like everybody else, they should be able to sit where they wanted to, and they said, we're not going to ride the bus. When King was meeting with that white citizen society, you know they tried to offer the man money to stop the protest.
Mm-hmm.
But he didn't do it. I mean, where would any of these movements be if guys go behind the doors and then take money and then use the excuse about,
yeah,
well, I'm in business?
Reminded me of something, and I know you know because I heard it on your show when the stuff went down in not Ferguson but Sanford. Remember when them young people was descending on Sanford and shut down that police department where Trayvon Martin was killed?
Yeah.
And they deployed them black pastors that work for the government. It's some kind of program. I just can't remember it right now. But they're like crisis response, and they take government-trained programs and get certified or whatnot, and they deployed them. And some of them is black preachers.
Yeah. Yeah, when any of these incidents happen, they're supposed to come and they did the same thing in Baltimore when the disturbance happened. Black ministers came out there and tried to listen. It happened in Ferguson. That little piece I play when Farrakhan says, did they tell Jesse to get the hell out of here? Jesse went down there and other pastors. And the people, you've seen the response that they got.
Now, I had told you, Elliot, and it's on Twitter, but I posted it in our community as well. But now they come out. Remember, we was asking, where's the social justice piece? Because all, you know, him and Roger Goodell with Jay-Z doing most of the talking was talking about some entertainment, some concerts and what have you. So this guy tweeted out some screenshots. I don't know where he got it from. So that's my only source, but it seemed plausible to me. So, you know, they didn't answer that question during the press conference. So now they're coming out and they're saying that, oh, they're going to have free concerts by these different artists and stuff before the NFL game, you know. And then they're going to also sell clothing. So it ain't like the owner's coming out of pocket and donating. You buying clothes to public, even you getting you the victim to buy the clothes to fund whatever nonprofit they deem that they want to, you know, deem safe and give the money to or whatnot. And so what that does, though, that's a straight shot at the youth. Who did Jay-Z target but our youth?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? The more radicalized youth are those we want to radicalize. And so, and so they are the ones that was behind the boycotts. They were actually the ones, you know, at the NFL stadium in front banging the drums for Kaepernick. And you know, so, man, you know, what he's doing is really underhanded, but I'm not putting it on him. He's a pawn. He's a pawn, and they're using him to fracture black solidarity on this single issue. And the issue, I can't stress enough, ain't social justice issues or even police violence. If we talking the NFL boycott, it's cause they blackballed Kaepernick, who stood up for black lives and said they should matter, and I ain't standing for this flag because it don't represent what y'all say. And by the way, don't you know this slaver, they took out the stanza where the slaver was bragging about the black folks they didn't put in the grave. You know what I'm saying? Kaepernick really was bringing it hard, man, and they couldn't stand that, and that's why he ain't got a job. So, you know, if Sean Carter wants to go ahead and cross the picket line of the NFL boycott, then, you know, it's not like he was ever on Cap's side anyway, because like we have documented with these articles, is He was already on the business side, making plenty of loot.
Yeah, and listen, we got to call it out. You got to call it what it is.
But I'm gonna drop off and continue to listen. I got a lot of work to catch up on, but I'm gonna continue to listen. But thank you for inviting me to call in.
Talk to you.
Thank you.
Right. Yeah, Richard, we got to call it what it is, to be honest. And I agree with you and Scotty. That's the excuse that a lot of them use now. Well, we got to be on the inside. Some of them don't say it's just business because that'll really kind of make them look stupid. They'll use other excuses. We got to change things from the inside and all that other stuff. But, when you're getting paid millions of dollars, and you ain't going to change nothing with those white owners who, and several of them done passed, those are children and grandchildren of other owners. Those teams, it's not like, somebody buys a team every few years or they change owners like you change your shirt. Some of these guys had these teams for a couple of generations.
Mm-hmm.
I think this guy here that owns this Philadelphia team and bought it. He bought it from this other guy who was a gambler and lost almost everything in gambling. And he's on the team now about 25 years. He's not selling this team. He's going to pass it down. If he got kids, he's going to pass it down to them like several of these other owners. Some of these other owners now, it's their children that own these clubs. The original owners of the clubs are dead. He ain't changing nothing with them people. He going to do their bidding as far as business, whatever they got for him that they want him to promote, that's what he going to promote. This new stuff about him doing entertainment and promoting a police partnership with the community and all that crap, they already got players running around doing that. I think the player here, Malcolm Jenkins, and a few others done running around with cops in these different communities talking about it's a partnership. I don't know what partnership they're talking about. It's never been no partnership with the black community and with police. They just had a rally here in Philadelphia here last week. In fact, earlier this week, Richard, they had the TV cameras out there. I didn't see a black face in that rally for the cops. Blow your horn if you in for the cops or whatever. Honk for a cop or whatever they was calling it. They just had a rally here. And then one of the police officials said, well, we do want to see more diversity. I didn't see a black out there. So I don't know what blacks they talking about that support these police gunning down black men, women, and children on these streets.
And I think that what I'm glad that Scotty brought up that issue, which I didn't know. I mean, the specifics in relationship to Kaepernick how he came to, take the position that he's taken. But we know, and I think that's the point that you're making, that it had impact on that generation that they're with Jay-Z. They're trying to shift through the entertainment now.
Certainly,
shift the whole dialogue. And I think that that's important when we're talking about where going to looking at it from the long view, looking at it from 2050. Because these young people will become those young, older adults in 30 years. They're 20, they'll be 50. What they're going to change to what is considered social justice is at 50, it's going to be considered, a whole different thing compared to if they maintain the type of activity that they did in Ferguson and these other areas when they were protesting. Now that they're 18 and 20, having that kind of mindset. This, and then the question of having these here minority business people being a part of the, white hegemony, changing the narrative. I mean, because that's basically that's the way I'm interpreting. They're changing the narrative. They're de-escalating the social activism that Scotty brought up about using, Montgomery bus boycott? That was social activism of people. Well, what happened in, I'm using Ferguson, what happened in Ferguson? That's social activism. I think it was, what was that where they held up the highway for days?
That was in Ferguson.
You know, that was in Ferguson.
Yeah.
I mean, and that was young people. And then we hear that the leaders of those activities, they start dying mysteriously. So, and now we have the shift of a entertainer being, I mean, you know, yes, he's, you know, he has a billion, but what's a billion when he's a part of a syndicate that's multi-billion?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I ain't saying any one of them had multi-billions, but together, and they have a network. He ain't got a net. He can't tell Trump what to do, but Trump told them what to do. They said, y'all correct me if I'm wrong about this now, Trump told them, y'all need to do something with them players. And they did it.
Yeah,
well. You know, so it's, you know, we just need to be, you know, I think it's good to, you know, have this dialogue, because this is something that's setting a template, a structure that's going to have effect on those young people as they get older. And what does social justice mean as we move forward? Because things ain't going to get no better.
And not only what does social justice thing. Mean, what does selling out
mean, right?
Yeah, that's even more important, because these guys using these excuses to take them out, whether it's Shaquille O'Neal, that owner of Papa John's who's invested in the Denver Broncos, they caught him making racist statements on the phone or whatever. Then when it leaked out, he gave up his seat as CEO, and all of a sudden Shaquille O'Neal is sitting in the seat, and they giving him award him some Papa John's franchise. He going to be the spokesman. Mm-hmm. You know, our people can't be ready to just a couple of bucks, or not a couple of bucks. Some of these guys are already multimillionaires. How much money you need? How much money do you need?
Mm-hmm.
At the expense the dignity of your people.
Mm-hmm.
And then when some of them get put out there, some of them don't care. They don't care what you think.
And it's interesting because, you know, we talk about the politicians, but this is showing a different class pool of individuals and their activities. And they, I mean, you can't say that they were elected by the people. They made money off of the people, but they made money being employees for somebody else and now being used. I mean, whether consciously or unconsciously, by somebody else. Again, I'm going to use that term majority interest to, you know, make it clear, because none of them are those white people coming to them wanting to be a part of their company and they in charge. I don't care how many millions or billions of dollars is being transacted. It ain't like them coming to them or them taking over them. Say, it used to be amongst us, we had a thing about, there's a movie called Putney Swoop. And, you know, and one of the phrases in there was brothers to the boardroom. It ain't like, you know, brothers to the boardroom. And then, you know, like white business owners, billionaires trying to get to become a part of the boardroom. It's definitely not in that direction. It's like when here the mayor said, this is chocolate. You know, we in charge.
Yeah.
And they said, what? What'd you say? And what did he do? I misspoke.
You know,
I think I got it right.
And speaking of the mayor, I want to read this article here, something that went on here locally before we go to the next call. But you know what? One other thing I wanted to mention in reference to this stuff that's going on. And all of this stuff here, they sit down and plan how they're going to use our people against one another. So they're using some of these younger people to drive a wedge. Not only with older folks that's looking at them, but with some of the younger folks that see what they're doing don't look right.
Mm-hmm.
And exactly. just, I want you to make a mental note. When some of these holidays, like when King's Holiday rolls around again, they'll do public service announcements with some of these same people we're talking about. we'll be talking about King, or whether they have Jay-Z, Shaquille O'Neal, some of these basketball and football players who don't seem to have a voice on what's going on as on the social justice front, or the front dealing with some of the indignities against their own people. They'll be talking about King. Oh, he was a great man. He's this, that, and the other, playing into these white narratives. They need to take some time and really study who these men were, whether you're talking about King or Malcolm, whether you disagree or agree with their strategies. One thing you have to understand and agree, that they cared about their people and they was uncompromising. The FBI went to Malcolm several times to get him to take money. King, you know they went to him to get him to take money. It's evident that they didn't, because when they got murdered, neither one of them could almost afford to bury them. They had to have other men put money together to bury these men. So they didn't compromise their values for money, to sell their people out for a couple of bucks. I'm using the term a couple of bucks, and in these terms, you're talking about millions of dollars. They didn't sell their people out for millions of dollars. Some of our people got to get a little dignity again. And it's going to take education and being aware of who they are as a people to understand that you don't always have to take money from these other folks. Because when they wave the money in front of your face, that shows you what they think about you as a people. We can pay these people off and they'll do whatever we want. Richard, let me read this article before I go to our caller here. And I'm going to try to highlight on some of these shows about keeping a scorecard of these black elected officials. And I would like some of our listening audience or whatever city you in, keep a scorecard of some. Listen, I don't care about these white elected officials. They're not going to do nothing for you anyway, no matter what they say. But when you got black folks that take these seats and claim they're going to help the community, we got to keep a scorecard and exactly what they're doing so we can confront them, so we can run somebody against them, so we can promote independent black parties in these cities and towns, so we can start developing candidates to take control of these communities. Let me share with you this article here of something that happened here in Philadelphia, which is the fifth largest city in this country. And I want to give you, first I want to give a little perspective. 25 to 30 years ago, you had a lot of vendors here in the city of Philadelphia, street vendors with all different types of wares. Two men were prominent in that area, the Street Brothers, and you know who they are, Richard.
Yeah.
Milton, who became a elected official and a state representative, and John Street, who became mayor of the city, a two-time mayor of the city. Well, before they were political officials, they were street vendors. And at that time, most of your street vendors were black. But they were being forced out of the center city area because they were putting this mall down there called the Gallery. So the men figured that they were going to elect an office and make it easier, because they was forming that street vendors union, make it easier for black folks to get licenses to be vendors. And at the time, it was the fourth largest city. You could make money as a street vendor. Well, that landscape has changed. You still have some blacks that are street vendors, but you can almost count them. And I'm not talking about the guys selling oils or incense on the street. I'm talking about street vendors that has all types of wares, hats, shirts, different pieces of apparel, small appliances, everything, food, everything. Most of those vendors now are of another nationality other than black. So here you go here in the city of Philadelphia. You still got neighborhoods that are populated with predominantly white folks. You got two representatives here in the city of Philadelphia, two council people that are white, that represents the greater Northeast. The greater Northeast is a white area, and predominantly policemen and firemen, white policemen and firemen live in those areas. Now, I want to read this article here, which shows another failure of black elected officials. And we talk about black elected officials controlling the economy of our community. Check this out, listening audience. And this comes from the Northeast Times, which is a paper in the Northeast area of the city of Philadelphia. It says O'Neill moves to ban food trucks and vendors from the 10th District. Food trucks and other sidewalk vendors may soon be banned throughout the Northeast section of Philadelphia. A bill authored by Councilman Brian O'Neill prohibiting sidewalk sales in the 10th District is awaiting a vote. Street vendors are already banned in the 6th District, represented by Councilman Bobby Heenan. O'Neill said he's begun looking at this issue after complaints about food carts and vendors on Bustleton Avenue and Grand Avenue. Vendors are already not allowed in a significant portion of the 10th District, but O'Neill said he recently learned that he could extend the ban to cover his entire district. Over the years, I've gotten requests to have sidewalk sales prohibited because somebody had a cart or truck that was parked in front of their or real close to a competing business that are paying taxes and have brick and mortar, he said. The 10th District covers everything from Roosevelt Boulevard to north of Cottman Avenue and most of the area of Bustleton to Grant. There aren't many food trucks in O'Neill's district, but a cluster have cropped up on Bustleton just north of Cottman. O'Neill said food vendors have an unfair advantage on restaurants that have to pay rent and additional taxes. He says street vendors often don't fit aesthetically in this district, which is more suburban than most parts of the city. They don't belong in this area, O'Neill said. Residents, businesses, civic associations have all opposed them. O'Neill said he would be willing to grant an exemption to the legislation if a particular community supported a food truck in their neighborhood. The legislation was reported out of committee on Thursday, and a representative from the Department of License and Inspection said the city had no objection to the rule that is prepared to be enforced. Now, this was a proposed bill in May of this year. Here it is, August, a couple of months, 3 months. Here's a new article. City Council passes 10th District food truck ban in the Northeast. Legislation prohibiting food trucks and street vendors in Councilman Brian O'Neill's 10th District easily passed City Council on Thursday. Sidewalk sales are already banned in the 6th Council District, so the bill will effectively prevent street vendors and food trucks from almost the entire section of the Northeast. An amendment was added to the legislation last month to give food trucks on Bustleton to Cottman and from Bly Avenue until October the 1st to vacate the area. Other vendors will have to close up shop immediately once the bill goes into effect. O'Neill previously told the Northeast Times he introduced the legislation to protect businesses who might be threatened by street vendors. O'Neill said they have an unfair advantage because they don't pay certain taxes. Well, street vendors do pay taxes. Council voted 15-1 to approve the ban, with Council at Large Helen Gim, who's Asian, the only member to vote against it. Now, Richard, you got a white area, Northeast Philly, who voted to ban street vendors and food trucks from their neighborhood. And they effectively did it. LNI said that they would go along with it. And it was passed by council, who have 9 black members. It passed. The only one that didn't vote, that voted against it, was the Asian woman, because a lot of those vendors up here are Asian and other nationalities other than black. So effectively, these two white councilmen says we're going to take back economic control of our communities. No longer can you bring street vendors and food trucks in our area. You're banned. but street vendors and food trucks with other nationalities other than black is all over the black community. And black elected officials don't do anything to stop it. They can do just what these two white council people did in their neighborhoods, effectively ban those vendors. They don't do it and haven't done it. Again, another failure of these black elected officials. And they voted in favor of this the white community to ban vendors from their community. What about banning these vendors from your community? What about replacing them with black vendors? It's black vendors that want to sell hats, shirts, food, fruit salads, and everything. You can replace these vendors that's in your community with black vendors. That's what you're elected official for. But you see it what has went on. Again, another failure of these black elected officials to stand with their community and develop a new economy in their community that keeps these other people out and effectively keeps them out, just like these two white councilmen did in their neighborhoods. Let's go to 215.
Hey, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. How y'all brothers doing tonight?
How are you, sir?
I'm doing fine. I praise be to Allah. I enjoyed the conversation that you and Brother Richard had with Brother Scotty and stuff. You know, brother, as usual, brother, you and Richard and tonight adding Brother Scotty to the list. I put up some damn good information tonight. I'm gonna try to put Kaepernick and Jay-Z and everything in a certain perspective. But Ellie, let me say this first about your favorite councilman at large, Alan Dumb. As I shared with you before, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard, to the time for the Wicked Listen audience, the more I think about this thing with Hanneman Hospital, Elliot, like you said, as they say, what's done in the dark, hopefully eventually come to light. So, it's just been eating away at me that this guy's involved in this development of Hanneman Hospital being sold to these real estate developers. And of course, a lot of people going to lose jobs, a lot of black folks. I mean, some white folks as well, but a lot of our people, Latinos, going to lose jobs, have been at Hanneman for years. But something tell me Alan Dumb got his slimy fingers in this, because like I said, I trust him as far as I can throw him. And hopefully the truth will be revealed at some point. And, you know, Elliot, Brother Mo had called on Terrestrial Radio a few weeks ago. He had said about the Eagles. He said if the Eagles don't sign Kaepernick, the black folks should boycott them. Now, this was prior to the Eagles, signing that white bum that they signed. And it was also, too, prior to the Eagles ironing those cops that, you know, was involved in the shootout in Nicetown a few weeks ago. And, you know, it just amazes me, Brother Ellen Richard. Now, they iron these cops for just doing, they was doing their job and stuff. You know, I mean, come on, man. What's so heroic about that's what they get paid to do. They was doing their job and stuff. And, I mean, yeah, they getting ironed. And now the soccer team going to iron these. So for alone, they should be boycotted by black folks.
You notice something I noticed, Joe?
Yes, Ellen.
The cops was, according to published reports, the cops were supposed to be, it was supposed to be six cops injured during that shooting.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they had those guys at that game. Now, I didn't watch the game, but I saw the news accounts when the news came on 11 o'clock. I didn't see no bandages on those guys. I didn't see nobody with crutches or nothing. They looked like just normal guys. For somebody that was wounded in a shootout, bullet wounds don't heal quickly like that. I would seem as though somebody would be bandaged up. I mean, Richard, just
need to stop.
No, I'm serious, Richard. Did you see any bandages on these guys?
But Brother Elliot, why you bringing this up, Brother Elliot? Again, you fueling what? I'm telling you, Brother Elliot, on terrestrial radio station here in Philadelphia, our black radio station, a lot of black folks that live in that area have said, and they didn't sugarcoat, they have said this whole thing looks staged, even the shootout looks staged. I mean, at first I thought that was legitimate, but now, according to what you're saying, Brother Elliot, if these cops didn't have no visible
wounds, you saw them. Did you see them? You saw them getting an award.
I saw them too, Elliot, and that was my response too. But I thought I'd get another, because I didn't want to be, somebody thinking I'm crazy. But that was my thinking too when I saw these guys don't look injured. But again, Brother Elliot and Richard, and to the time from where I can listen to audience, people called us Black Radio Station. They was telling the various hosts that the whole thing looked staged from the beginning, that the whole thing looked like a show thing and stuff. You know what I mean?
Well, so did, I know you saw that published report, and Richard, I know you probably saw it. It kind of leaked out, but you didn't hear anybody really harp on it, that the guy that's under arrest and charged with the shooting at those cops, attempted murder, was a confidential informant. Did you see that?
Yeah, FBI.
Mm-hmm. FBI confidential informant. So he was known by somebody.
You talking about Mr. Maurice Hill?
Yeah. Evidently, the Philadelphia police and the federal authorities knew of this man. He's a confidential informant.
But see, Elliot, don't you see how things fall into place, Elliot? See, let me say this, Black man. See how things fall into place? As you, and you hit the nail on the head, Brother Elliot Booker. The police was getting a bad rap in Philadelphia after the stuff on Plainview, when they was making all those racist, violent, you know, attacks on Black folks and stuff, and they was getting blasted and all across the country with police, bad police behavior, corruption, murdering innocent Black men and women and children, whatever the case may be. So they needed something to try to get the image up. So this was a fine opportunity. See, I smell a rat in this thing now. Now that you told me this Joker could have been, and here's the kicker, Brother Elliot and Richard. Now, see, so you look at this thing. Now, his so-called lawyer, Shaka Johnson. Now, this individual, come to find out, he was an ex-cop. See, that's why I say you start looking at this thing. He was an ex-cop, and he was a member of the SWAT team. I mean, you know, it just, this is just too coincidental, man. And then now you say, here's the possible this Joker could have been an FBI informant, Mr. Maurice Hill.
Well, no, they already put it in a published report that he was an FBI informant. He was a confidential informant.
Again, Ali, these things are just more than circumstance. To me, this is more than circumstance, man. Like I said, Ali, as a student of the most honorable Elijah Muhammad, I put none past this Caucasian brother, because the honorable Elijah Muhammad taught us 50 years ago that this man is the master of trichnology. He makes truth in the falsehood. He makes falsehood in the truth. So, I mean, I don't put nothing past these people, brother. I don't put nothing past them, what they're capable of doing. This whole thing smells like a rat and stuff, man. I'm telling you, Elliot. I'm glad, because I didn't know about this thing about him being a government or FBI informant, but now pieces starting to fall together. Because, like I said, Elliot, I'm not going by somebody that live in South Philly, Richard or Elliot, or live in Germantown or the Northeast. These people that live right around there, residents that live right in the air, and they say this whole thing looked like a stage thing, like something out of a damn carnival movie or whatever. This is what people were saying on the terrestrial radio station, and I gotta respect these people. They live in the area, man. I mean, oh man, I tell these people, boy, I'm telling you, man, it's just, oh man, I tell you.
And we have to ask, you know, whether, you know, even though we're dealing with, and let's continue to call it circumstantial. I mean, mm-hmm. even with the facts, right? We have the broader picture. Why?
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, even with, for me, as you, you know, the element I would want to bring in there is Meek Mill's and this here criminal justice, or
Brother Richard
Kurtz and his thing. And then, Elliot, you have brought up earlier to me about the whole thing with the state, you know, coming after the DA,
mm-hmm.
And trying to make it seems like these pieces is for something. And you know, I just, you know, one of those who like to know what the why is to this, mm-hmm. because that's strategic thinking.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
and
sure.
That's not about what's happening now. That's about what's being put in place for the future.
Oh, no question about it. And see, Brother Elliot, like Brother Elliot said, Brother Richard, these people use our people and stuff, man. You know, they just use our people. And it's disgraceful when you mention about these Black city councilmen. They voted right along with this white boy, but yet they can't do a damn thing in their community to get Black vendors. Matter of fact, Marin Tasco, who I have no respect for, when she was city council, she did all she could to run Black vendors out of Germantown and Mount Airy and every place else. I mean, it's like these niggas, you put them in office.
Go ahead. Elliot. No, go ahead. Finish your thought.
You put these Negroes in office, Melvin, and they work against the interests of their people. They are disgraced, man. But we keep on electing these kind of people. Like Brother Scotty so correctly said the other week about, what's his name, John Lewis. You got to start primarying these. We can find capable. Look, we got a lot of Black folk in this country and stuff. We got capable black men and women in this country that love our people, that love their people, their culture, they know their history, and they were getting this in these jobs as council people or state reps, and they would work for the good of their people. These Negroes like the John Lewis's, the Marion Taskos, and the disgrace that you got in city council, now they need to be ran out of town on the rail and stuff, man. And matter of fact, Helen Gim, like I said, she, her motive may have been to protect Asian Venice people, but guess what? But she did something that I did like. She being attacked now by the white and black city and by Brady because she endorsed the black woman who I have a lot of respect for. She endorsed her for city council. Like her name is Kendra Brooks from the Working Families and stuff. This is like Michael Cord always say, don't ask me, don't tell me what you going to do. Tell me what you have already done. This sister has a track record of working good in the black, doing on a grassroots level and stuff. And Helen Ginn endorsed her for city council at large. You got three, you know, besides her seat, you got some other council seats at large. And she endorsed. She's being attacked and stuff. And I'm saying to myself, well, I have no problem, for somebody endorsing somebody that's not part of the Democrat machine, because that's our damn problem now. We keep voting for these people strictly because they Democrats and stuff. When they don't have a damn, we don't have a record of doing nothing for black people. All they got is a black face on, like Brother Fred would say, rest his soul, black face on white power. And you see when them Negroes when they get in there, how they cut black people's throats time and time again. Like I said, Marion Tasco, the name one, Curtis Jones. These Negroes, they was put up. And supported by the Democrat Party, but what do? They get in there and get black people there behind the kids. What do Curtis Jones do? He go and campaign and tell black people, you know, screw y'all, I'm going to get this street named after Wilson Good, whether y'all Negroes like it or not. And you was there, Brother Ella, at the meeting and stuff like that. Just the disdain they got for our people and stuff, man. You know, we like I said, until we start getting politically savvy and educated, know what these people stand, where they stand, and stop voting for these people because Bob Brady and them say, well, he's because him or her is a Democrat and they black, we automatically should vote for them. Hell no. Some of them Negroes got just as much hatred and disdain for black folks as white people do. And we need to be aware of that. These Negroes, all they is, like Brother Fred says, black face on white power. That's all they are and stuff, man. You know, and on JC. Let me jump over with James Comey real quick. Again, I'm sure y'all been hearing about the James Comey popped up back in the news. And see, here again, Brother Richard and Brother Elliot, how black folks have played out of position. Back when all this stuff came out with Comey and Trump going at it, I don't care neither one, because both on white bigots and stuff, they don't have no love for black people. But they was going at it. You had black people on the radio taking up for Comey as if he's some kind of friend of black people. This is the same thing, like you said, we suffer from lack of knowledge. We don't understand where these people. Back in 2016, when you had the Alton Sterling, and I understand, be clear, Brother Ellen Richard, this is a factual stuff happened. When Alton Sterling was murdered by them bigots down in Louisiana, when Brother Philando Castile was killed in Minnesota, you had James Comey, who was FBI director at the time. He had met with police chiefs all across the country, and they showed it on the various, you know, cable news outlets. And Comey was saying stuff to them like, "Well, you know, I feel y'all pain. I'm getting tired of law enforcement being attacked. Every time they discharge their weapons, they being questioned and second guessed, and that's why the morale is so low. You know, because they got to deal with these thugs out here in the community in these rough areas. Every time they discharge their weapons, they being protest, they being called racist, they being called killers and all this stuff." He said, "I'm getting tired of it," and stuff like that. That's why the morale is so low. But yet you got simple-minded Negroes on terrestrial radio speaking up for James Comey because him and Trump going at it as if that devil was some kind of friend of black people, man. Come on, man. We got to stop being so foolish like that. Like I said, Comey, Joe Biden, Trump, all of them a bunch of bigots. None of them kidding. I'm not give a damn about no black people. It's like we want to play this game like your devil better than my devil. You know what I mean? Come on with this foolishness and stuff, man. I mean, you know, these people don't have our interests at heart and stuff, but yet we still fall for the okie doke. Now, Jay-Z, Brother Elliot, again, I did not know that Jay-Z was invested in that company, like you said, that they help monitor, you know, like you said, people that's on out there on probation for nonviolent crimes and all that. I didn't know that.
You know what, Joe? Let me say this in conjunction with that. See, now all the pieces, it's almost like you throw a bunch of pieces on the table and you got to fit the puzzle together.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I might be wrong, but now you're starting to see where Robert Kraft and all these other mm-hmm. people, as all of a sudden they're friends with Meek Mill, and they're getting in a partnership with Jay-Z. Jay-Z is already involved in this ankle monitoring. So when people get out of these federal places, they need to be monitored. See, all this stuff's starting to fit together, man.
No question. No question. And Brother Elliott, you know, Reverend Joe Williams, that caused Teresa Rare, he made an excellent point to Joe. This showed you what a sad commentary we as a people. He said that you got black folks, you got all these high-profile black athletes, black politicians, and black movers and shakers. They move mountains, Brother Richard, and stuff. They move mountains for Meek Mills and stuff. Now, granted, the judge, Janice Brinkley, she may have been a little heavy-handed with him. She might even got personal. But like Brother Elliott correctly said, Brother Richard, Meek Mills was no angel. He violated his parole on several different occasions. That's we can't get around that. But yet, none of these so-called black movers and shakers and black athletes and black politicians, many of whom Bill Cosby helped out personally, saying not a damn word for Bill Cosby. Here you got an 82-year-old black man in jail for some BS and stuff, right? Ain't none of them Negroes saying nothing for Bill Cosby. Yeah, he did many things for many of them and stuff. And these schools like Spelman and Temple, they took his money, took his name off the board of trustees, but guess what they didn't do? This is how impressive these people are, Elliott and Richard. They didn't return the money. Now you're gonna take the man's name off the board of trustees and all that, and he was on many boards at these prestigious schools, but ain't none of them get the money back. Ain't none of these schools yet, maybe one I think maybe gave the money back to Cosby, but all the rest of them, Temple, Spelman, they kept his money, you know what I mean? But yet they gonna take his name off these. I mean, you know, these people are so unprincipled and stuff, man. They are so damn unprincipled. But yet they can go out of their way for Meek Mills, but they can't do nothing for Bill Cosby. If some of these black politicians who Bill Cosby personally has donated to and helped out, they got Governor Wolf's ear. They could put a word in for the one stroke of the pen by Wolf, and Cosby would be out of jail tomorrow. You know what I mean? These people are a disgrace, man. I'm telling you, our priorities, man, is just so you can go out, you can move mountains for a gangster rapper who be putting out lyrics demeaning our people, women and children, but you can't do a damn thing for a black man that donated money to black colleges and help young brothers get in the business. You can't do nothing for him, but you can go out and move mountains and stuff for a guy that's, oh man, I tell you,
Elliott and Joe, Elliott, you raised an interesting point in putting those pieces together, and Joe, I'm bringing it up because, you know, what I was told was that Meek Mills represent another generation compared to the generation that Jay-Z represents. Mm-hmm. So, and when we look at this here that's going on in Philadelphia, when you got a 26% poverty, deep poverty, well, 14% deep poverty, 26% poverty rate, and this is black, amongst black people, which is not going to change anytime soon.
Mm-hmm.
You expect, you know, before a lot of guys was on, not just crack, Elliott, but some of them were picked up on marijuana charges. Mm-hmm. I mean, what they call it, non-violent charges.
That's
and
right.
Placed in these here cells. So now you have for that, and some of them they are been in several years and haven't even had trial yet.
That's correct.
Because they're saying that the population, overpopulation of the prison system, and the delay within the court cases. So what I'm saying is that they're now. It's a different type of opium, right? They mm-hmm. give you entertainers who supposedly speak to you, but speak to you to keep you complacent.
That's right.
To deal with your situation because they don't really have nothing for you to do. You're 20, 30. I mean, they're letting guys out who's 40 years old. What are they going to do after 20 years
exactly.
in prison? 25
exactly.
years in prison.
Good. That's an excellent. Richard Bay is an excellent point, brother Richard. Because you're right. They just let this brother out and here in Pennsylvania. He served like 30 something years for a crime he didn't commit or whatever. They just let him out of jail. But like you said, this brother's older now. What is he gonna do? You know what I mean? This brother just happened to get out of jail, and because I think the brother he was in jail, so he said he got to get used to a cell phone or whatever. You know what I mean? I mean, this is how long this brother been incarcerated, man. I mean, this stuff is just, you know, Richard, you're spot on what you're saying, man. We got to stop.
And it makes them, these young people, complacent with this. I mean, as Scotty said, that they'll even have to pay for these ankle bracelets.
Sure.
Just like they become aware, they'll become aware. Just like, I mean, I can never forget when the guys I grew up with, when he came back and said, oh, I said, well, where you been at, man? He said, I just got out of college. I said, yeah, what college you went to? He said, Graterford,
which is
a prison.
Yeah. This is the prison, yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. So that kind of mindset at another generation, because there is no jobs. They don't have no jobs. You know, they don't have nothing to do for them. The only thing you can do is move them out of the city or contain them within the communities that they're placed in. And unless you have guards, the electronic monitoring is the only way they're going to be able to do it.
That's true.
But they got to justify and have somebody who sell it to them. So you got the entertainer.
And brother, I'll tell you these last two, and I'll be gone, Richard Elliott. You're right, make a good purpose, because I know Brother Wayne, God rest his soul, and stuff, one of our elders, who's now an ancestor now. Brother Wayne said, when he used to work in the Department of Public Welfare, he said the brother's mindset so messed up, he said he'd be out at the CJ Center or whatever, and the young brothers, they'd be the white man, they're similar to their black behinds to jail, and they think it's a game. They think it's like a rite of passage. Oh, yeah, dog, I'm going to see Ra-Ra up there, man. Yeah, he up there, dog. He up there for 5 years. We're going to get together up there, thinking this is a game. These brothers putting you away and stuff, want to put you away for years, and you thinking it's some kind of game. But this is the kind of monster that we as black folks, Richard Nellis, has tried to change. Let these brothers know it's no damn rite of passage going to jail. And so, first of all, you're going to jail, you're getting a record on you. Number two, these white folks so wicked, they put you in jail around some sick brothers where they could take your manhood away from you, whatever like that. I mean, so there's no picnic going to jail. But you got to change that mindset and stuff, man, because these brothers got to stop with this mindset that going to jail is something to be proud of and stuff. Nothing to be proud of and stuff, man. And lastly, like again, like you said, how the brainwashing. Like I said, like Brother Otis has said about the picture, the documentary I want everybody to see called The Making of the Occupation of the American Mind, about how Israel used the propaganda to get the racist diatribe and brainwash people around this country and around the world. And like in the prime example, Ellie, when you said about Draymond Green, the Golden State Warriors, here this misguided fool, he over there in Israel, like you said, I think you said he was Samuel, whatever he was doing with the rifle, whatever, like he out there shooting Palestinians or whatever like that. I mean, such an ignorant Negro and stuff like that. He's so stupid, he don't understand he's being used for propaganda and stuff. He's fighting against people, he's fighting against an oppressed people, and these same people that's using him over there in Israel are the same people that have oppressed these people, not only in Israel, but help support the racist regime of South Africa to kill our people in Johannesburg, Sharpeville, and everywhere else. See, he's a prime example of a Negro that don't know his history. And when you got a fool that don't know the history, they can fall prey to stuff like that. That's why your point is always well taken, Brother Elliot, when you say Hosea says this program is necessary because our people suffer from lack of knowledge. Because I'm quite sure if Draymond knew the history of his people and the history of Israel and in relation to black people, people like Moshe Dayan, the former Israeli prime minister, who said that this country is weak because they got too many Negroes over here. If he knew the history of how racist these people are, he wouldn't be up there being used as a propaganda fool like he was over there. You know what I mean? Again, it all goes back to having knowledge of self, knowing your history, knowing your culture, knowing your people. When you don't know those things, you can fall prey to anything. And a white man knows that, whether he a Jew, whether he's Irish, whether he's Italian, like they, at the end of the day, they're all white and stuff, and they all got that racist mindset, so they all use our people for a wash rag and stuff, because they know our people don't know their history, so they use them. They use them, like the song say, like Bill Withers, they use you till they can't use you no more, brother. And I just thank you, Brother Elliott and Richard, for giving me the time, brothers.
All right, now. Peace.
Peace, Brother Elliott. Peace, Brother Richard.
Richard, we've come to the end of another program, man. It was an interesting conversation tonight, but especially the contributions from Scotty, some of the things he mentioned. Kind of put
it for me, added, you know, definitely new facts.
Different
understanding
perspective.
The evolution of that, you know, as far as the cabinet and how he came into, you know, taking that knee. I mean, that, you know, knowing a friend was shot to that degree is something. I guess it did affect him.
Well, it wasn't his friend. It was a young guy that was that looked at him as a, you know, like a sports idol.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was a principled stance because he had an opportunity to stop kneeling and to conform, but he didn't.
Right.
And when his contract went up, they didn't sign him back. And it don't look like he's going to get back in that league, although I know he wants to. But he's not. They didn't have quarterbacks go down. They was talking about him signing here because as a backup. To me, if that guy plays in this league, he's a starter. He's not a backup quarterback. But you know, I mean, it is what it is. He's not going to get back in the league, I don't believe. They made an example of him. So, it's almost like when they would catch one of our ancestors that ran off that plantation, they would make an example of them. Either they would string them up and beat the daylights out of them, or beat them within an inch of their life, cut off some body part, or sometimes even kill them and let them hang up there so people can see them. That's to send a message to others not to do it. So, you know, they made an example of him where they don't want these other guys doing this.
And don't want the people, you know, because a lot of times those things were done because they seen the resistance, the liberation struggle was getting stronger, and they needed to have strong symbol of what could happen to you if you tried to take a principled stance, because fighting for your own liberation is a principled stance. And people coming out, you know, as Scotty brought up about the you know, the trashman and you know, the strike, you know, that was a principled stance. The Birmingham bus boycott, that was a principled stance. You know, that was a people stance. You know, young people sitting at lunch counter, that was a principled stance. That was young people. And when that starts in motion, you got to try to curtail that some kind of way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and this, you know, is obvious, you know, you're dealing with the Freddie Gray and all these other, that young people were, you know, Black Lives Matter. It was creating a pop amongst Black people. It's, you know, and I think it's important for us to understand white people had their, you know, the campouts and things when they were, those were primarily white people who were, young white people who were sitting out in front of the city halls and creating these camps. They were primarily white people. But these marching in the street for these gun violence, this blatant killing, those were young Black people.
Yeah.
And Kaepernick, like, was able to galvanize that around the issue that they identified with, which no politician was able to be supportive of, because that was anti-police.
Yeah, you're right. So the more and more these issues come to the forefront, you see where a lot of these people stand.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, we got to keep these things in mind and take action, take relative action compared to what they're doing. Whether it's keep a scorecard so we know what to do. I mean, we just can't let this stuff just continue, because it's not going to change if we as a people don't do anything about it, or do anything about the people that is involved or are complicit in a lot of this stuff that's going on. Look like we come to the end of another program, Richard, and I want to thank everybody for listening to the program this evening. Lively discussion, as always, and we'll be back on Sunday, Lord willing, to continue on this path towards an awakening. Peace.
Peace.
If you're driving through the country on a lazy afternoon, or you're watching your children playing after school, they seem to be so unaware of, I know, the things that they'll soon have to take care of. We've got to do something, yeah, to save the children. Such a small part of the things that they'll soon be right at the heart of. My little Tommy, he said he wants to be a fireman.
Time for an awakening, the Warren Ballantyne show that was scheduled for 10 o'clock this evening will be aired at 11 p.m. So if you want to catch Warren Ballantyne, tune in to timeforawakening.com at 11 o'clock to catch the Warren Ballantyne podcast. Talk to you soon. Peace.